Welcome to episode 18 of the Reading Coast podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For June 2012, we're discussing Magnolia Wednesdays by Wendy Wax. So I'm Millennia, the founder of The Cove, and I am in Florida.
I'm Roberta. I live outside of Atlanta.
I'm Monica. I live in Nebraska.
And we are gathered today to discuss Magnolia Wednesdays by Wendy Wax, which is our 139th pick, and it was chosen by Roberta, who's here with us today. So let's start chatting. So how did you like it, Monica?
I would have liked it better if it would have stayed an afternoon read, because, I mean, by that I mean like kind of like a Fanny Flagg book. It's just about, you know, local people, nothing really big going on. She kind of threw that big twist into it, but didn't really talk about it a whole lot. Mm-hmm. With the murder of Melanie, was that her name?
Yeah.
Husband, and, you know, him being gay, but it just seemed like that really wasn't the focal point, but it was such a big event that there really wasn't a lot of time spent on it.
Right.
So I thought either keep it an afternoon read or keep it a, you know, kind of a big event book. But, you know, I think I was probably the only one out of the group that liked Vivian. So no, I thought everybody else was just not so much the sister, but I thought so many people in this book were just completely rude. I'm like, wow.
I think a couple others said that, you know, they started off not liking her, but by the end, they kind of warmed up to her. I never did like her. How about you, Roberta?
Well, even though I picked this book, I was sort of disappointed. I had won this book as part of a gift box last year at a book signing that I went to for Wendy Wax and Karen White. Mm-hmm. And I had read one of her earlier books on vacation last year, this Leave It to Cleavage, which was cute. And then I had read last year's book that she had, 10 Beach Road. And, you know, I like both of those. And you know, I just felt they had a little bit more empathetic, I should say, characters than with Vivi in this one. But, yeah, I get, even though I picked it, I just didn't think that it was, I could see maybe they want the character to grow, but I was sort of disappointed on a variety of levels overall. I mean, I gave it a decent grade because it did have its moments, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Right. I liked it in the beginning. I liked the way it was setting up the story with her being replaced by a younger reporter, investigative reporter, and, you know, being squeezed out of her job and then finding out she's pregnant at 40 and, you know, not being able to pick up another job and then having to take the job with this, you know, kind of low-rate paper, writing, you know, gossipy, snarky type stuff. So in the beginning, I was into it. I just feel like it fell apart when she actually got to Georgia and nothing much really was happening in between the plot turns. It was just repetitive and she's, you know, following Melanie around so she can get dirt to write her column. And somebody made a good point in the group saying, you know, could she really make a decent living writing one article a week?
Especially for a lower rated paper like that. I don't know. Maybe she had some savings and thought would go on to, you know, bigger and better things. But no, I don't think reporters, unless they're upper echelons, make very much money.
Yeah, so she's, you know, doing that and then she's pregnant, and most of the tension for most of the book was felt really contrived to me because it was only based on her stubborn determination not to tell Stone that she was pregnant.
Well, or even not to tell the other people, you know,
and everybody else,
her family,
exactly,
that she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And they should have been able to tell. I mean, she's kind of small. I know I started showing when
tell.
I was about 4 or 5 months.
They could tell because Melanie told her flat out, I've known all along you were pregnant. Duh. You know, it's so obvious. And that mammy that worked at her mom's house,
mm-hmm.
What was her name? Evangeline?
Uh-huh.
She knew.
Yeah, I like it when she kept taking food out of it. Like, oh no, you're not eating this.
Funny, but yeah, it wasn't real. The tension, it got old for me. And then, you know, her investigation, that was a joke. It was like, really? How long was she in the house before she finally went into JJ's office?
Well, I think that was mainly not so much what it looked like, at least from the way it was presented, not so much that she was concerned about her sister and everything else. It's just like she thought this might be a hot scoop for her and get her back a better job again. You know, unfortunately, it seemed like it was more for her own benefit more than anybody else's.
Exactly. And it just was like, it didn't come across as real to me. It's like the attempt to try to make a murder mystery. You know, at first I was curious and I thought, okay, this should be interesting to see what really happened. Because I think it was clear from the get-go that it wasn't an accident.
Right.
It wasn't a hunting accident. So I was intrigued by that to find out, okay, what really happened to JJ? And what does Clay know? And did Clay kill him? Did he, you know, have it arranged for him to be killed? Or, you know, I was thinking it was going there. Then when it was revealed that they were gay lovers, I was just like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. So that did come out of nowhere for me. That was a surprise.
It was.
And, you know, some people in the group said that they, when it was mentioned that Clay had this great fashion sense, that they kind of suspected the gay thing. But I never did. I didn't pick up on that.
I picked up on it when they were talking about his fashion sense and even their time in the dorms. But I had, you know, my family. I mean, no one I met but aunt and uncle split up because he was gay, and so I kind of, it was just hidden. You just got married and you just had another life, even though you're just living a lie because you couldn't come out. And I think him being a politician, he couldn't do it. So it, I could just kind of tell by the way he was acting, or the way Clay was acting, it was like that for them.
Yeah, I never picked up on that. And I was thinking if there was going to be a triangle issue, like Clay was in love with Melanie or, you know, something there. So this just was a direction that I wasn't seeing. So, I mean, that's fine. But it just ended up feeling really anticlimactic, and the way that it was revealed with Shelby confronting him at the almost wedding.
Right.
And it just so happens that he's, you know, speaking so intimately with another man that it's so obvious. I didn't buy that. It's like, oh, all this time, you know, he's been very good at keeping it hidden, but this one time he's, you know, publicly being intimate, speaking intimately with someone, and she just walks up and confronts him, and she reveals that she knew her dad was gay. I would have liked to know, how did she know that? Nobody talked about it. It's like, how did Shelby know that her dad was gay?
No, I said, well, I don't think that was really explained, you know, other than if then she picked up certain clues or something.
She must have, but, you know, I think it would have been interesting for that to be discussed. But nobody talked about it, and it was just like, kind of gimmicky to me.
And so that had such little focus that when it did come out, and it's like, oh, okay. Because it had such little build-up. I mean, it was very, very sporadic. And, I mean, it was a long book, but it just seemed to talk about everything, and then occasionally it would talk about JJ's death.
Yeah, and it had a lot of those subplots with Angie and the dance studio. The dance classes got really old for me. I was so bored when they would go to the dance classes. And, you know, I just skimmed through all the subplot stuff with them and the Ida and their problems and them going to see the shrink and all that stuff. I was not interested in any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she was the author maybe trying to develop other things and show, you know, this older woman and her husband and the stuff they had to deal with it compared to the younger people. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know that really enhanced the book. I mean, it's interesting, but at the same time, at the end, I wish I'd known more about, you know, what happened after here. He has a heart attack and almost dies. And, you know, I wanted to hear a little bit more, like what happened after he got better and got out of the hospital.
Exactly.
If they were going to include that.
Yeah. I mean, it was loosely tied to the main plot through the dance studio because, you know, she was there. What was her name? Rita?
Ida's
wife.
Ruth.
Ruth was very supportive of Melanie, you know, having lost her husband. And she was like Mama Bear. So I liked that angle. But then, yeah, I don't feel like it really was necessary to go off into a whole other subplot with her character. To me, it just felt like it was distracting from...
Right. I mean, yeah, it'd probably been better if they just focused on how she was supporting Melanie and
exactly.
how she helped her deal with getting on with her life after this, you know, sudden death.
Yeah, and we could know that maybe she's having some issue with her husband, but we didn't need to be in their shrink appointments, and we didn't need to be, you know, in their house with all the Jewish... I mean, I feel like we were hit over the head with the fact that they were Jews.
Yeah.
Really. It was too much. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it started out promising, but then it just meandered into blahness. And Vivian was just way too self-centered. I said this in the group because we've already had our online discussion going. And she was way too self-centered to carry an entire book. At least for me, I don't like main characters that are that self-absorbed because they get boring for me. They're not interesting enough.
Well, or at least that they have to have sort of a Paul on the road to Damascus epiphany.
Yeah.
And have some big life-changing thing, you know, to me, to make it interesting. Like, you have to have some big moment and then see them have, you know, growth and change after that. But, I mean, and she did change a little bit in the end because, granted, having a baby is going to change you regardless of what age you are.
Right.
But I felt like there was ways that... She could have shown more growth and shown more ways of dealing with stuff because you basically felt sorry for Melanie because here she was trying to repair their sort of distant relationship. And I think that one time that she probably the only reason Melanie didn't kick her out of the house was because she was pregnant, had nowhere to go because she just realized, well, she doesn't care about me or the kids. She's just, you know, here because she has no place to go and she's just using me, you know, not only for a place to stay, but to take this gossip and stuff about my friends and neighbors and try to revive her career. So, you know, I would be furious too. You want to help your family out, but at the same time for them to just be fully taking advantage of you, that's not cool.
That's not cool. And when they found out at the end and they all stopped speaking to her, it's like that was supposed to give her the insight. You know, the consequences was
right.
She had hurt them and, you know, they weren't speaking to her. And then she has the baby and everybody bonds over her having the baby. And it just, I don't know, I don't feel like she made that evolution. It's like she did what she wrote that sorry, you know, mea culpa in the paper for her final column because nobody was speaking to her.
Yeah.
Was she really sorry? And, you know, in going on beyond the book, you know, she marries Stone and they have their son. Do I feel like Viv is a different person now? I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. I didn't finish the book feeling like, oh yeah, you know, she learned her lesson and she grew from these experiences. I don't know. It's kind of like the person who steals and goes to jail and they're not sorry they stole, but they're sorry they went to jail.
Right.
That's what I got from her.
Yeah, I don't feel there was like true hope and redemption for her. You don't know that, you know, you know, hopefully she'd make a life with Stone, but I don't even know if that's going to take.
Yeah, because it felt like he knew her better than she knew him.
Right.
Because he sent her camera guy down there because he knew something was going on. He knew she was hiding something. He could tell. Yet she was so far off in knowing that he would want to know from day one that she was pregnant. He would be there. Instead, she's going back and forth about how, she doesn't want him to feel obligated. Oh, she's afraid of the commitment it'll mean. And, you know, all this nonsense. And she didn't know him at all.
No, I mean, it's not like she's a kid anymore.
She's
middle-aged.
Yeah. And she had all this angstiness throughout the whole thing that was carrying. I mean, the pace of the book was so slow, you know, and it went into all this detail about, you know, drawing this picture of suburbia, and that at times felt a little overdone. It's like, okay, we get it. She's in the suburbs and she's making certain observations about the atmosphere of the suburbs and all that stuff. But it bogged down the pace, and then the things that you really want to know about you know, you're not hearing anything about it. It's just going on. And the other thing I thought was just ridiculous was how I said in the group, how every time she goes to the doctor's office, every time she goes to the supermarket, she runs into people talking about her column.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, really? They're talking about this column and going off about this Scarlett Lee. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. That's not even, I'm not even buying that.
Well, I guess that was just a way of showing how these people were upset about it, you know, that it was making a bad impact instead of a good impact.
Yeah.
Well, I thought her articles, I thought it was more, I mean, not so much her noticing suburbia now. I think it's more like the way she was brought up, and she hated the way she was brought up, and it was kind of using that to alter what she's writing, like just kind of clouding her opinion is by kind of how her mother was. So I think a lot of the opinions were about suburban moms were more about my childhood sucked articles because of my suburban mom. So I think it was, in a way, it was kind of therapy, like kind of a message to her mom, but not really talking to her mom.
Right.
About the way she was brought up.
And then how she would be cringing in guilt and feel shame whenever she was writing the articles and being so snarky, but it wasn't enough to make her realize she was just using her sister and her family and make her stop. And then Christmas comes and she buys all these, you know, really expensive gifts for them, and that's supposed to make her decent? That's supposed to make up for it? I feel like she thought it would.
Well, yeah, so maybe, but as I say, you can't really buy love. You know, that everybody in that family needed more support and more emotional support from her and not just financial things.
Right.
Another thing that kind of surprised me was Shelby's attitude. Like, I would never have talked to my aunts or uncles like that.
Well, you speak to people, you know, the way you are allowed to get away with speaking to people. And, you know, Shelby was just really rude, and her mom was apparently, you know, having a difficult time controlling her.
Yeah, I thought, you know, like when she saw her sneak back in the house, it's like, my mom would have gotten on my butt.
Exactly. But that part was just cut. She saw her sneaking in, and then she was like, okay, she has to do something about this. But then we don't know what she did. Like, what?
My guess was she didn't do anything about it. And, you know, and I did think Vivian should have told Melanie about her coming home drunk from prom and late, because,
absolutely,
you know, it's not like she's being a tattletale for some tiny little thing. If one of my kids did that and my sister knew it, I'd want my sister to tell me that my kid came home, you know, 3 hours late and drunk.
But she had a right to know that. I mean, Vivian didn't have a right to be there hiding that stuff from Melanie. Melanie is her parent, you know, and so, I would be very upset with her. And I don't think, even in the end of the novel, Melanie never found that out. Did
yeah.
She? That never came
I
out.
I don't think she did.
So even though it all's well that ends well, I guess they say, but what if it didn't end so well? What if Shelby had been pregnant? Even though I have to say she was, what kind of 17-year-old doesn't know you can't get pregnant from oral sex? I mean, you must be very sheltered, but they teach the birds and the bees in like fifth grade. Seriously.
Yeah, but I didn't know the answer to that when I was that age. And, you know,
17?
Even if you look on the internet, people are still asking about it.
At
like,
17?
Hey, can I get pregnant from this?
Oh my gosh, well, I didn't know that they were that. I thought that by that age, you had an understanding of how it worked. You should, anyway. Yeah, but definitely, if Shelby had gotten pregnant, then Viv would be in a very uncomfortable situation, having known what she was doing and, you know, like, keeping it from her mother so she could be the cool aunt.
Yeah, but she would have done it anyway. I mean, she would have found a way to do it during, you know, within the curfew and...
Yeah, but her mother still has a right to know what's going on. She lives in her mother's house. I mean, I would never agree with anybody to keep stuff like that from a parent about their child.
Yeah, she should.
They
yeah,
live
she
under
should
your
have told
roof,
her.
And you're responsible for them. So yeah, I don't agree with how she handled it at all. One scene that I thought was really funny. I didn't, you know, I think this was supposed to be like a dramedy, like I said in the group, like you know, kind of like tongue in cheek, like Desperate Housewives, you know, with her going to the office and every doctor's office, every time she goes there, they're talking about the column. And I just could see it playing out like one of those primetime dramedies. But the one fun part that had me laughing out loud was when Vivian took Shelby and Tripp to the game at their school, for their school or whatever. I think it was a football game or whatever. And they wanted to run because they didn't want anybody to see them with her. And she was like, they took off so fast, they left her talking to herself just like an old person. I was cracking up at that. That was like the funniest part to me. The rest of it, I was just rolling my eyes. I just thought the Gone with the Wind references, it made her mom and Evangeline come across like caricatures, like cliches. You know what I mean?
And I thought it was overdone.
Yeah. It just felt like, okay, come on.
And I didn't get Ellen O'Hara from her mom.
Exactly.
I mean, I liked Ellen O'Hara, so, and then I thought her mom was just a little, I don't know.
Her mom was like stick figure.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know, I thought there was just too much Gone with the Wind. I was like, okay, I get it, it's Georgia, yeah. Gone with the Wind, and I love Gone with the Wind, but I thought, like, it just, you know.
Yeah, I love Gone with the Wind too
much.
But it was too much, and it made it a cliche, and it didn't give them their own characterizations. You know, it's in the scenes that went on there, and the house was called Magnolia Hall, and like when they had the Christmas dinner, and what dinner were they having, and the paper had come out that was exposing Vivian.
I think it was Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and her mom was all upset, and that whole scene was so, it just didn't feel right to me. It was over the top. But, you know, I guess maybe it was supposed to be. But to me, a lot of this stuff just came off as, like, lazy writing. It's supposed to be, like, over-the-top funny, but it just, I don't know, it just felt lazy to me.
You know, and I didn't know if, was she supposed to be, like, Scarlett O'Hara? Because I didn't get that. You know,
who,
and then
Vivian?
You got Melanie, who was, yeah, and you got Melanie, her sister, who was kind of more, I guess, more like the Melanie in Gone with the Wind. But I really wasn't getting that.
Oh, yeah, the Vivian and
that
Vivian Lee.
Yeah.
Maybe, because this was, you know, just flavored and peppered with Gone with the Wind all over it.
Because you kind of have the self-absorbed character, and you got the kind of the nice, sympathetic, you know, Melanie figure. But I don't know. I thought that was kind of over. Like I said, it was just too much Gone with the Wind. And but I did like... reading about Georgia. My boyfriend's from Macon, so I like kind of hearing about the, I guess, geographical aspects of the book.
Yeah.
And the, like, kind of this, you know, talks about the smells and the flowers and everything.
Yeah. And then the end, I was asking in the group, how come her mom wouldn't want to see her son, the baby, when she had the baby? Her mom just sends Evangeline over there for 2 weeks to help them out, but she didn't want to see her grandson. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, well, like my mom and my grandma were like that when I had my first, because I was 17, and my mom
was
older.
Hello,
yeah,
she's 40.
But it was like still a scandal. Like, you got pregnant without being married, and a big, you know, I'm gonna protest this thing. And
No. So
they were like, they weren't even gonna, like, my mom didn't want to hold her, my grandma didn't even want to look at her. You know, I mean, they changed, you know, eventually, but it was like.
Yeah, but I didn't get that. That wasn't the circumstance here. There was, I mean, yeah, they told their mom off and they had the argument and everything, but it didn't feel like it would be inappropriate or awkward for her to say, can I see my grandson, or come over to Melanie's house, even show up at the house, you know? So
it was a way of punishing Vivian, but really she's not, she's more like punishing herself and the grandson, but she's doing it to spite her daughter.
Oh,
it's just, I've known enough spiteful people to to see it, and that's why they're doing it.
Did you get that, Roberta?
Yeah, I think I can agree with Monica. And you hope that, you know, her mom will come around eventually and see that, you know, she needs to forgive and move on and, you know, have a relationship with her grandson. But, yeah, unfortunately, you see, like I said, spiteful people that just, it's all, even, you know, if it's hurting them worse, it's all about holding this grudge and being mad.
Right. All right. Well, any other scenes you guys want to talk about or memorable scenes?
I don't know. I thought, like, in the beginning when she meets the new reporter that's taking her place, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, my gosh. Just the way she was acting, I was like, wow, she's, like, really rude. I thought, like, the whole way it was done was terrible. And I'm like, I would have quit, too. I was like, I'm not going to train her. Yeah. You want her? You can train her yourselves. Bye. Yeah. You know, and I was kind of hoping something would happen, like she would end up doing horrible, or like the ratings would bomb because of her, or she'd, you know, hoping something bad would happen, or just because of the, like, I was like, just thought she was extremely, just a mean, nasty person.
Yeah.
And even just on a page and a half about her.
Well, I said, yeah, I probably like that one of the better scenes is Monica saying, because you do see things like that happening all the time, that people that have all this experience and are doing a good job, then they get tossed out just because they're not young and pretty anymore. Experience and loyalty don't count for much. They want the new fresh face, as they say. So, and the new fresh face, they usually, to be able to do something like that, they have to be pretty ambitious and driven and have no regard for anybody except their own career. So,
well, you know, they did say that her ratings were slipping. So,
yeah, but I said, but it's just that I thought it was interesting that because that was a really more real to life, authentic thing, because those situations seem to happen a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Especially with women. You know, with men, they can go along and get a little, you know, put on a few pounds, get a little jolly, and it's okay. But women, if you're not, like, skinny as a stick and look all perky and fresh, then you're going to get replaced, you know, if you don't even keep things perfect.
Maybe they thought that if she were younger, she wouldn't have got shot in the butt. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that's what, that was just sort of, that's just to add some comedy. That was kind of coincidental that happened before this, because I think they were already ready to give her the old heave-ho.
Oh, yeah. Because they said her numbers weren't as good as they used to be, and other stations had gotten younger talent, so.
But even if you watch the news shows, like, the men are kind of old and sometimes fat, and, like, the women are all young.
Yeah, it's true. There's definitely a double standard.
So that was truly one of the more believable, authentic scenes, you know, early on in the book. But I said, I'm hoping I have her Wendy Wax's sequel to last summer's book on hold, Ocean Beach. So I'm hoping it'll be better. But I did like the last year's book, 10 Beach Rogues. I read a couple of beach books last year, and I liked that one a lot better than this. But it focused more on women's friendships. You had three strangers basically thrown together, and they had to form a bond, a relationship, and work together. So I think sometimes, like, friendship books like that work even better than dysfunctional family books.
Right, right. Okay, so that's our take on Magnolia Wednesdays by Wendy Wax. Thank you for listening, and as always, please leave us your comments, and stay tuned for July's episode, where we'll be discussing Michael Vay, The Prisoner of Cell 25 by Richard Paul Evans. See you next month. Bye.
Bye. Bye.